Dr. Skinner, welcome to A Round It About.
Well, thank you very much. I certainly appreciate the welcome, Mike.
I think a lot of people know that there's a problem with bees. It's been established for a while now that bee populations have been declining. There's all sorts of different things going on. But I want to start with people who say, you know, okay, well, that's sad, but so what? I like honey, but so what if the bees decline? Why does it matter in the grand scheme of things if there are a lot of bees or just a few bees?
Well, bees are very important to our economy, to our health, and really to our welfare and well-being, because they're responsible for pollination. This is an action that allows fruit and vegetable production. Without bees, we would not have pollinated crops, and they certainly wouldn't be available at the cost that we are used to paying in our grocery stores. Imagine if we were to have to pay someone to climb up a stepladder with a little paintbrush and move pollen from one flower of, say, an apple to another to pollinate it. That would make it much more economically unfeasible. And so they're very important for our diets if we want to keep eating those fruits and vegetables.
Many people, as we were saying, are aware that the bees have a problem. How severe is this? It seems like some scientists, some activists are saying it's a bee apocalypse. Other people are saying, well, periodically bee populations decline, but they always bounce back. It's nothing to really get worried about.
Well, I'd say it's something to be concerned about. I don't know that I would use the word apocalypse, but I would say that we have lost colonies of honeybees, have increased over time. It does fluctuate up and down between 30, 40, 50% losses every year, and that's pretty serious. And there are many causes that we suspect due to these problems. That's why this is a complex issue. It's not something we can say, well, this is exactly what causes it. It's also one that's localized in that in one area, say the problem may be to parasitic mites primarily, and or the viruses we now know that they vector. Or it could be something entirely different, like a disease, a fungus that's causing a problem. And also these different diseases, fungi and whatever, can be spread by these mites. The mites alone can kill the colony. So beekeepers often need to manage their colonies to manage the level of the pest, the population, so it doesn't hurt the bees. Also, pesticides are a concern. We know they've been implicated in a number of situations where something can be sprayed on the crop at bloom while bees are visiting, and it can kill the pollinator. There's a concern about a new class of pesticides called neonicotinoids, which means these are systemic materials that are put often on seed treatments, that protect the plant. And they are, on one hand, they are good for us because they have low mammalian toxicity, which means it doesn't really harm us or our pets. The problem is these materials are very damaging to bees at a very low percentage. And I don't think we realized that when we first started using these chemicals.
I know it's pretty controversial. Europe banned them for a couple of years to study them more. Some people are saying we should ban them here in the United States as well, these nicotine-based pesticides. But then some scientists are saying, well, we've gone out in the field and done research, and what we find in the real world is very different from the laboratory studies that indicate these could be harmful. It's got to be really confusing for the average person who's trying to research this and figure out who's right.
Yes, Mike, it is a complex issue because on one hand, we don't want to bring back certain kinds of chemicals that can cause more problems to us, but we want to save our pollinators. So right now, there's a lot of work being done, studies, to try to figure out how we can do just that. Can we have both? Can we use them but not have them damage the pollinators? You talked about research, and research is a difficult area to look at. It always depends on the exact study that's been done and how it's how it exactly is done in the field at that time and that particular location. And so we have to look very carefully and critically at research results to make sure that, you know, that design could not be improved upon, and basically we could do a better job with it.
One of the most recent ones that got a lot of press, a researcher at the University of Arkansas went out and studied corn, soybeans, and cotton that had been treated with this specific kind of pesticide, and his research didn't really find toxic levels of this pesticide, so that seemed to indicate that maybe the pesticide wasn't a problem. But of course, other people are criticizing that study, saying, well, you're only looking at one kind of thing, not another kind of thing. What do you think about all this?
Well, that's why a number of kind of studies, we should replicate them, repeat them, and see if we get the same result more than one time. That's part of the whole scientific process. The experiment is only good as the design is for that particular time and that particular location. Things change over time, and I'm not trying to say that to be wishy-washy in any way at all. It's just that we want to base our information on research data that is accurate.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Dr. John Skinner from the University of Tennessee. He'll be here in Chattanooga June 9th to give a lecture on pollinators and pesticides. And earlier you were talking about some of the natural causes of bee problems, of bees dying in widespread places. You were talking about these veromites. Are those worse than they used to be? Is there something going on with that, or is it just people need to be educated about how to properly, you know, keep their bees?
Well, the varroa mite is probably considered worldwide the major pest of honeybees right now. As a parasitic mite, as a parasite, especially on the developmental stages of the bee, and it causes severe damage. And like I said before, this beekeepers do need to understand what to do about this. Now, there are techniques, because we do have now at our disposal resistant bees that are partially resistant to these mites. So I recommend beekeepers use that stock of bee to combat this on one level. Then there are other things they can do, like use an open bottom board. Normal bottom boards in the past have been solid wood. If we make them of screen, we found out that mites fall off the body of the bees. And if we can get them to fall out of the colony, then they're no longer a problem. So that's using a physical tactic and not chemical to reduce the population of bees. Another aspect of this that's critical, too, is that they have to understand, how do I monitor my bee colony for mites? Are they there? Do I have a problem? Do I need to do something? So we've established threshold numbers using tactics to count the mites in the bee colony. And we try to teach all the beekeepers to use those tactics so that they'll know what they have in their colony, and then they can make a better educated decision on how do I do something about this.
The Tennessee Valley Wild Ones, one of the organizations that's sponsoring this, along with the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga, have been making a big push for people to plant milkweed in their yard to attract monarch butterflies, another kind of pollinator. Is there anything that people who don't actually want to keep bees, but who want to just help the situation in general, can do in terms of that? Maybe something they can plant in their yard that would be good for bees or something like that?
Oh, certainly, Mike. There are a number of things in attracting butterflies with many flowering plants will attract pollinators. That's part of the whole interaction with flowering plants. And, you know, if you've ever thought of, well, what is the purpose of a flower? The purpose of a flower, we believe, is to attract that pollinator, because the pollinator gets food and the plant gets to reproduce by making seeds due to the pollination event. And so if you plant the kind of what we call in beekeeper language forage or food plants for bees, then they will have a food supply that will help them survive, and you get the benefit of having them pollinate whatever else is in your garden, maybe, or just enjoy the fact that they're there.
That's Dr. John Skinner. He'll be here in Chattanooga on June 9th to give a lecture about pollinators and pesticides. What are you hoping people get out of your lecture here at UTC?
Well, I hope I can stimulate some thought, and that they realize that this issue isn't just a cut and dried, it's either one way or another. Many times when we look at complicated issues, we find out that there are several possibilities for what they see. And so we're going to examine some of these things. We're going to look at some of the studies that have been done, and I'm going to suggest other things that we need to do in the future to work together to find solutions to these serious, complicated problems.
Overall, do you think that it's a hopeful situation right now, or does the situation continue to get worse over time?
Well, it has its ups and downs, but I think if we looked at it like a tunnel, we are no longer at the start of this tunnel. We have done research and understand it much better than we ever have before. And yet, we certainly aren't at the end of the tunnel yet, but we're getting closer. So I'm thinking we are making progress with this. And the reason I say that is I've seen so much more cooperation from many, many sources. I mean, from those you might think would be opposed, like pesticide companies and naturalists and other people that want to look at protecting our food supply in other ways. And everyone seems to be concerned about the plight of the pollinators. And so if we work together, I think that's the way we can deal with these serious challenges.
Dr. Skinner, thank you so much for talking with us today.
It's been my pleasure, Mike.